Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
Whoa, Scott. Slam on the brakes here.
Again?
The anti-lock brakes.
Oh, yeah, but don't pump them.
But don't ever pump them. Hi, I'm Ben Bolin. Today's episode's going to be about anti-lock brakes, right, Scott?
Yeah, that's right. And we've got a few, I guess, maybe some driving safety tips, I suppose. And I think what, you know, don't immediately tune out if you're a listener and you think, well, I already know all about ABS brakes. You know, I've already read the article on How Stuff Works about how anti-lock brakes work.
And, right.
You know, I don't need any kind of, you know, detailed information about the system or the parts or any of that stuff. We've got a little more history to it. There's just some kind of interesting dates along the way that, some surprising dates, as a matter of fact.
Right. Because what we do whenever we handle something that you guys probably have already heard about, some of you have probably already replaced ABS systems and stuff like that, we're not going to tell you so much some tired how-to. We're going to tell you the stuff you might not know about the evolution of ABS as well. And it goes back further than most people think,
right? It goes way, way back, decades and decades and decades. And, you know, Ben, we've probably even got mechanics in our audience that, and in fact, I know we have mechanics in our audience that they work on ABS brakes.
Oh, yeah.
So, and one more thing. Can I just say this? Because I know a lot of people are gonna nitpick at this, I think.
Okay.
And I probably would too, and I'm just gonna say it up front. I know that that ABS stands for anti-lock braking system. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I say ABS system, it's just because that's part of the natural role of this whole thing. I know that's redundant.
Like ATM machine?
Yeah, that's right. ATM machine is redundant. ABS system is also redundant. I understand that, but I'm probably gonna say that occasionally throughout this whole thing. And I'll try not to. But, you know, you may catch me doing that.
Yeah, and also that's a fairly common term that you're going to see a lot. Quite a few people say that. And some writers for manufacturers use the phrase ABS system.
That's incorrect. Yeah, I mean, it's correct that they do that. It's incorrect to do it that way. I mean, I guess if you have the time to write and you're carefully putting something on paper, or in electronic form, whatever, you should be able to manage that a little better. But we're going to try. We're going to try not to say ABS system and just stick with ABS.
Okay.
All right. That was preemptive on my part.
I think it's better to be prepared here. So first let's do the most basic definition of anti-lock braking system. Well, we know that brakes can have a one dangerous thing that can happen. If you slam on the brakes too hard, they can lock up.
Exactly. Your wheels will lock up. And what happens then is, of course, your wheels, you know, they're not providing any kind of real traction on the road. The contact patch that the base of the wheel is really just, it's continually in motion across the surface. You're not able to steer. It's dangerous in that your car continues the same motion that you're already headed in, just the momentum of the vehicle carries it. So let's say you're on a slippery surface and you're going into a turn.
Sure.
You push on the brakes and they lock up. You're just going to continue right off the edge of that turn. You're not going to, be able to make the turn at all. And what ABS does is it allows you to brake and steer at the same time.
Right. And so what happens here is in pre-ABS brakes, I'm doing it too now, except I said brakes instead of systems. Pre-anti-lock or with non-ABS, a driver could manually pump the brake. That's what you're told to do in older brake systems, and that pumping prevents wheel lockup. But in vehicles that do have ABS, what you should be doing, what your foot should be doing, is being planted firmly on the brake pedal because the system is going to pump those brakes for you.
Yes, extremely fast, and we'll get to how fast later in this podcast, but I think we should jump right into the guy that invented these things, because it does go way, way back. It goes a lot further back than most people would really expect.
Hey, Noel, can we have some time travel music?
All right, so we're going all the way back to 1929.
Wow.
And I think that's going to surprise a lot of people. A French engineer, I guess, an aviation pioneer. I don't know what to call this guy. His name is Gabriel Voisin.
Okay.
And Gabriel was, again, an aviation pioneer. He was the creator of Europe's first heavier-than-air engine-powered aircraft, which is capable of, sustained flight.
Oh, cool.
And this is in 1908, so he's early on in the game. Now, By the way, France, I want to mention that we were doing that in 1903 here in the United States. So that's a little bit of a call out to you. But anyways, moving on. He was also the very successful, by the way. I don't want to take anything away from this guy, this Gabriel guy.
Genius, really.
He really was. He's a provider of World War I aircraft, called the Voisin 3. Let's see. Then he switched to automobile production. Around 1905, I guess, he produced these luxury automobiles that were called the Avions Voisin, which is tough for me to say, but did that for a long time. These were around until 1946, and I'll tell you what type of cars these are, Ben. If you were a Concours aficionado, if you were someone who liked that type of car,
sure,
these dramatic big coach-type cars, mm-hmm, these French luxury automobiles, beautiful, beautiful coach work in these things.
These are like the cars of kings.
Yeah, they really are. They're almost like a little bit Art Deco in their design. They're very, very long, very flowing, beautiful lines, very stylistic cars. And the whole reason that this guy, Gabriel, we're getting back to the ABS thing. The whole reason that Gabriel wanted to develop this new braking system was because, of course, he was interested in aviation. And one thing about airplanes is they needed to accomplish what they call threshold braking.
Mm-hmm.
And threshold braking is where you're slowing a vehicle at an optimum rate by allowing the wheels to just get to the point where they're just about ready to lock up, but not quite. And oftentimes what will happen is, and this goes back to the pumping the brakes things, what you had to do in the past was you'd have to almost let the wheel just start to lock up and then let off and then just start to lock up again and then let off again. And you have to manually do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you could only do that, you know, so well. I mean, it just wasn't something that a human being could really do.
Right, especially in a... adrenaline-filled moment.
Exactly, yeah. So you're trying to accomplish the hardest braking that you possibly can without wheel slip or with minimal wheel slip. And that's the goal. And in airplanes, I guess, was critical way back then. And he developed this real kind of simple system, I guess, you know, that was really the precursor to all anti-lock braking systems from that point forward. And it's really, you know, the principles behind it are the same type of principles that relate to today's systems.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, going way back, I mean, 1929, that's a long, long time ago. So, again, it prevents wheel lockup, allows the driver to continue to steer while the vehicle's braking because, you know, it's not locking the wheels up, you're not sliding, you're not losing control. That's the main benefit of this thing is that you can steer out of trouble or you can steer around an obstacle that mm-hmm appears in your path.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the thrust of this whole thing.
Yes, and the system itself has four main components. So, okay, the idea we've already explained the idea, right? That there's that a skidding wheel has less traction than a non-skidding wheel, and that's why ABS is so valuable. With ABS, if it's working and if you're driving correctly, you'll be able to stop faster and you'll be able to steer at the same time. Beautiful. Life-saving stuff.
Yeah, so it improves vehicle control and it decreases stopping distances, both on dry and on wet pavement.
Yeah, perfect. Nail on the head there, Scott. So as we were saying, there are four main components. There are speed sensors, there's a pump, there are valves, and there's what's called a controller. If it's okay, I'll just run down these real quick.
Oh, please do.
Okay, so speed sensors. This makes sense because an ABS needs some way of knowing when the wheel's about to lock up. As we said, this is all about the optimal braking, the threshold braking. So the speed sensors are located at each wheel. In some cases, they're in the differential. And then there are the valves. There's a valve in the brake line of each brake, and it's controlled by ABS. In some systems, the valve has three positions. Position one, it's open. So that means pressure from the master cylinder passes right to the brake. Position two, the valve is blocking the line, isolating the brake from the cylinder. And this means that it'll prevent the pressure from rising further if the driver pushes the pedal harder, which equals less chance of a lockup, right? In position three, the valve releases some of, maybe not all, of the pressure from the brake. So now we need a pump, right? Since the valve is able to release pressure from the brakes, there has to be some way to put that pressure back. When a valve reduces the pressure, the pump's there to, guess what, pump the pressure back up.
Makes sense, right?
Right. And the controller, of course, is the computer in the car watching the speed sensors, taking the information from there and deciding how to control the valve.
Fair enough. And you know what? People can look under their own hood and spot an ABS controller easily. It's usually a silver or a black block, and will have several lines coming off the top of it, hard lines, like maybe steel lines. And, you know, they'll either be black in color or silver, mm-hmm. and they'll be around almost like a can off to the side. It looks like that's the motor that you're talking about, the pump motor. And then there'll be an electrical connection, and that's the electronic part of this whole thing. That's the brains of the whole system that tells the valves, which are inside that silver block, mm-hmm. when to open, when to close, when to become in like a partial position, like what you mentioned before. So any of those positions that you're talking about, and control the motor and all that stuff. So,
oh, and Scott, I just want to point out that you made an excellent drawing.
I was wondering if you're going to say anything about that. You know, I have a relatively detailed drawing here that I made because I didn't want to forget the parts and what they'd look like. I know pretty simple. I mean, you spot it any time you open the hood. You'll know what it is. But yeah. I just didn't want to forget anything, I guess, in this case. So, okay. So okay. I think we've talked about most of the stuff that we want to get through in this really so far. You know, how it prevents wheel lockup, you know, improves vehicle control, decreases stopping distances, don't pump the brakes. And the reason you don't pump them, by the way, Ben, and I told you I'd tell you how fast these things can pump them. Now, you mentioned all the valves and you mentioned the electronic controllers. That's kind of new, the electronic control part of this.
Right, yeah, and that's much more modern.
And I mean relatively new, because I want to go through a list of dates in just a moment that'll tell you. But how fast does this thing pump the brakes, Ben, you may ask?
Hey, Scott, how fast does an ABS pump brakes?
We haven't done that in a while. 16 times per second is how fast the ABS system will pump the brakes for you.
That is crazy.
And what you're doing if you pump the brakes yourself is you're defeating what the ABS system is doing. Now, it's going to feel weird. The pedal's going to pulse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's normal. That's telling you that it's actually working. It's braking, releasing, and that's allowing you to continue to maintain control. It's allowing you to steer while you're braking, because otherwise you would be in a lockup situation when you feel that pulsing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are trying to pump the brakes in addition to that, you're simply defeating what it's doing. You're slowing it down from what it could be doing.
Which means it's going to take you longer to stop.
Exactly. It could take you a lot longer to stop, as a matter of fact. So that's not the thing to do with these things. That's kind of a caution that you'll hear over and over again is do not pump the brakes if you have an ABS system.
Oh,
now, what's that?
Before we get to the timeline, which I do want to hear, I wanted to ask you for some advice.
Oh, what kind of advice is that?
Well, I am.
You having girl problems, Ben?
Oh, man. My girlfriend listens to this show. I have to plead the fifth on that one, Scott.
Understood.
But I am going to be traveling. So I'm looking for, I don't have one of those fancy XM radios yet in the Monte Carlo. But I do have the ability to listen to some audiobooks, and I was wondering if you had a pick for me.
Well, good news for you, Ben, because I have gone to audible.com and I found a pick that I think you and our listeners will enjoy, and it's about 5 hours and 51 minutes long.
That's perfect.
Perfect.
That's the exact length of my trip.
That's what an amazing coincidence. Now, the title of this book is called Tim Richmond, The Fast Life and Remarkable Times of NASCAR's Top Gun. And this one goes back to the 1980s, and the NASCAR series. And this guy, it's by David Poole, the book is. This is an interesting cat, this guy, this Tim Richmond. Now, he was a driver in the NASCAR series that I mentioned. He was he changed over from open wheel racing, and switched over to stock car. Now he was also, you know, he was at the Indianapolis 500 in 1980. He was named Rookie of the Year, in 1980. So he was a decent, open wheel racer, but he switched over to NASCAR, which is kind of a trend later. You know, a lot of drivers do that. In 8 seasons, he won 13 NASCAR races. And he was just consistently in the top 10 and top 5, you know, and just about every race he was in. He was really, really just a great contender. Also named one of the 50 greatest NASCAR drivers of all time in 1998, which is, that date's important, 1998, because, I'll tell you a date later that'll kind of surprise you. But this guy, he was, oh, you know, one more thing. Inducted into the Motorsports Hall of Fame in 2002, the International Motorsports Hall of Fame.
Okay.
So this guy, he's the real deal.
Sure.
You'll see a lot of old film footage of this guy, of Tim Richmond battling out on the track with Dale Sr. on in the NASCAR series.
Wow,
you know,
Dale
Earnhardt Sr. Well, when Dale would drive that blue and yellow Wrangler car, and this guy, Tim Richmond, he was driving, I think it was a number 25 Folgers car,
mm-hmm.
and had the real square bodies and everything. It was a great battle on track, but they were good friends also. this guy had a lot of fans on and off the track. He was real, real flashy, real flamboyant, I guess is the way to say it. He was a driver from Ohio, Ashland, Ohio. And, ladies loved him. He had these, I guess he was a good looking guy.
Okay.
And in fact, he had hoped to kind of parlay this NASCAR thing that he was doing at the time into a career as a Hollywood actor. He was, he really wanted to be an actor, and he just totally lived up. I mean, like, his life was nothing but fun and excitement, and the guy was doing everything. They'd show him on, you know, like on cigarette boats, you know, at the pilot helm.
Uh-huh.
Is that the right word? Pilot helm? At the wheel.
Yeah.
And, they'd show him, you know, of course, driving his Corvette out on country roads and, you know, just having a blast. The guy was always having fun. And strange thing is, like, he went through this whole thing where, like, he was a real standout on the track. He was a real flamboyant personality, real exciting guy to watch, and, you know, on and off the track. The tragic thing of this, Ben, is he passed away at the age of 34 and didn't die in the way that you would think that a driver like this would die. He died in 1989 of HIV/AIDS. And that was part of this whole lifestyle that he was living, this crazy lifestyle. And at the time, it was unknown. So this all came out later.
Oh, wow.
That, you know, that was what was going on because, you know, he was diagnosed with like double pneumonia at times. Okay. And then he was too weak to qualify for some races. And
yeah.
they'd find him asleep in the pits sometimes because he was just overly fatigued.
And probably at that time, they weren't sure what the cause of that illness would be.
Exactly. And you know what? I don't want to focus on that because the book here is about really the lifestyle that he led while he was in NASCAR, which was in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating because it was so typical of somebody that was living that type of just wild life in the 1980s. And
yeah.
I love the film footage of this guy from that period because he was having so much fun.
Speaking of the whole package, could we go back to the timeline? Now, we left off with our inventor in maybe like the late 20s, 1929,
yeah,
early 30s.
1929.
How did we evolve from his early airplane-inspired invention to the modern ABS?
All right, let me go through this quickly because we want to do this fast, right? We're going to kind of wrap up here. But 1929, of course, was developed by Gabriel Voisin for aircraft, really, a French designer. Now, 1958, Royal Enfield Motorcycles actually tested the system, but the guy that was a technical director didn't like the system. He said he didn't really see any potential in that type of system, and it never went into production. So this is going back to 1958. Missed the ball there, right?
Mm-hmm.
1960, there were only two race cars that used kind of an experimental version of this, and there was also an experimental Ford vehicle, an all-wheel drive Zephyr vehicle that used the ABS system, but it didn't go into production then either.
Hmm.
In the late 1960s, there was the first all-electric anti-lock system that was developed for the Concorde jet. Which was, I don't know, we've talked about that. We've talked about Concorde in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't until really the 1970s when the big three kind of came around and started to use ABS. Now remember the Concorde jet was the first one to use it, and they said, well, geez, if they can put it on that, we can put it on the 1971 Chrysler Imperial. And, Chrysler and Bendix, I think it was, Bendix Corporation came together with something they called the SureBrake system. And, it was a three-channel system, four sensors, that, you know, was pretty complicated system, but you know, again, 1971. It was also computerized in 1971, which is really strange. That was early on.
That's prescient, really.
1971, Ford Lincoln Continental. They used a rear wheel system called SureTrack. So it was only on the rear wheels.
Hmm.
In 1971, GM did a similar thing that was rear wheel only, for the Cadillac cars and the Oldsmobile Tornado. And they called their system the Trackmaster. And that was in 1971. So, you know, they all did it at the same time. And it's kind of telling that, you know, they're watching what each other's
just
doing.
Just with different proprietary names.
Exactly. 1972, Triumph, had a four wheel drive vehicle called the Estate, where it was standard, but it was very rare because there were very few of those vehicles made, and then also very rare, you know, because few of them survived, so not many of them out there. 1978, Bosch, this is kind of one side note, I guess, and then we're almost done. Bosch came around, you know, Bosch Automotive Technology, came around with the first, anti-lock brake system that was electronically controlled or fully electronically controlled and brought it to market. So it was available to everybody from 1978 on. Not just, you know, the manufacturers, you know, the big three that, you know, were paying heavy big bucks. And then it wasn't until, I'm going to skip ahead here just a minute.
Okay.
No, you know what? I'll stick with it. So 1985, Ford came out with a vehicle called the Scorpio. It was introduced in the European market, and it had Bosch electronic system. That's 1985. Just 1 year later, Bosch came out with a traction control system, or TCS, which reduced drive torque to each driven wheel. It's kind of an extension of ABS. So think about it this way. There's like the ABS system, then there's traction control, and then another layer on top of that, which is electronic stability program, which is also a Bosch product. And it's kind of like the most comprehensive of all the systems in that, you know, it incorporates ABS, traction control, and this electronic stability program all into one. It's like one big system that you can buy now. And the good thing about that is that it works in all situations, braking, acceleration, you know, all driving situations. So let's say that, you know, something happens and your ABS lights comes on because you hit a puddle.
Right.
You're watching, the electronic stability control system in action at that point.
And this, this evolution also continues. And we know that ABS is successful because really what the technology has been doing at this point is further refining the original applications, you know, adding more speed sensors.
Yeah. It's just taking a good idea and making it better.
Right. Exactly. It's tweaking it. This is great because it has reduced fatalities in accidents. Just a couple of quick do's and don'ts for ABS. Scott, we already said, do not pump the brakes. It's going to take you longer to stop. Another important thing is do not let your foot off the brakes. Just press firmly so the system still knows you're trying to brake the car. There are a couple of those are, I think, the two biggest don'ts, you know. There are a couple of do's, and they're always the same ones that you should hear every time someone talks to you about brakes. Do allow yourself enough distance to stop. Yes, hypermilers, I know you can slipstream. It's not worth it. I want to put that in.
Fair
you can
enough.
Draft, rather.
Fair enough. And then, of course, weather conditions play into that as well. So, you know, slippery roads, snow, ice, rain, whatever it happens to be, just give yourself plenty of room because, I mean, the system is great. It really will work.
Yeah.
However, it does have its limitations and it's not going to help you in something like that. I mean, it just, if it's sheet ice, you're still going to slide.
Right. And your car may sound like it's making some strange mechanical noises. That usually just means the ABS is in action and working.
Yeah. You're going to hear some clunking. You're going to hear some pulsing noises. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is working. I mean, I know that people have even brought cars back to the dealership.
Oh, yeah, because they thought they were broken.
Yeah, with that clunking sound, thinking that that's not right. But that's just the ABS working.
And let's see. How successful has ABS been? Let's end on a good note. As of 2007, it became mandatory in all EU vehicles. You can't stop a good thing. Well, I mean, I guess it's a good thing that it can stop. Oh boy. Digging the hole deep here.
Yeah,
Scott.
I guess so. Yeah. And it seems like, of course, you know, U.S. cars, of course, have had this mandate for a long time that ABS is required as well standard. So, you know, there's so much to say about the system. I know we've just done kind of a quick overview and, you know, components a little bit, but
the history. Fascinating history.
Yeah, the history is more what I wanted to get out there. And that, you know, there's it goes way back a lot farther than most people think. 1929, I never would have guessed prior to this that 1929 was the date when ABS really was born.
And that it originated from aircraft. Go ahead and impress your friends next time they try to lecture you about something. Go, hold up.
I mean, look at a 1929 World War I, I guess, aircraft, really. I mean, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And say, man, that's where ABS came from. You're not going to believe it.
And we hope that you guys have enjoyed this episode on anti-lock braking systems, both the evolution and the basic function behind them. Scott, you and I are about to head out. People who would like to learn more about this can always check out our website, carstuffshow.com. You can also drop us a line on Facebook because we're social in that online sense. You can send us a tweet at Twitter. You can cut out the middleman and suggest a topic for our upcoming episodes by sending us an email at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.